Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for February 18th, 2012.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
We have a problem. We have too many people. We need to feed these folk for the future.
Roughly 3 billion people, so close to half the world population, cooks with basic solid fuels.
Less than 5% of that energy gets converted into food or products that we can use.
It's like barbecuing indoors in the dark.
This week, we're coming to you from the AAAS annual meeting in Vancouver, British Columbia. Scientists from around the world are gathering here to tackle issues of global significance, such as how to boost crop productivity to feed a growing population, and how to make cooking fuel safer and less polluting for the world's poor. We'll tell you about that, as well as the latest research on printable electronics. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on a positive use for video games.
Action-oriented video games often get a bad name for being too violent. But new research suggests that they may have positive benefits for people born with cataracts. Developmental psychologist Daphne Maurer of McMaster University and her colleagues studied adults who had undergone surgery as babies for congenital cataracts. While the surgery makes it possible for them to see, their visual acuity is not as good as that of people born without cataracts.
When we continue to follow the patients out to adulthood, we discovered that the patients who had had cataracts, so they missed seeing the world in the first few months of life, never develop adult-like acuity. They have what seems to be a permanent deficit. So just going around looking at the normal world was not sufficient to induce any more improvement in their vision.
Maurer's team had them play the action-oriented video game Medal of Honor for 40 hours.
We got the clue that video games might make a difference because even in adults with normal vision, if they play an action video game, there will be improvements in their vision.
Indeed, the visual acuity of the volunteers playing the video games improved significantly over the course of the study. Maurer thinks this may be because action-oriented video games exercise many facets of the visual system simultaneously.
Thanks, Suzanne. Inkjets have been printing computer documents for decades, but now inkjet technology is being repurposed for cutting-edge research, including human organ engineering and ultra-thin electronics. Science reporter Justin Warner tells us about an advance on the electronics front.
The next generation of gadgets may include medical sensors embedded in skin decals or MP3 players printed on shirts. Their electronic components are literally squirted from an inkjet printer onto a surface. Now, University of Illinois material scientist Jennifer Lewis and grad student Brett Walker have developed a silver ink that tops existing versions. As Lewis explains, the silver doesn't clump into particles until after it's printed.
Because it's devoid of particles to begin with, so it's a particle-free silver ink, it can flow readily through nozzles as fine as 100 nanometers in diameter.
That's an order of magnitude smaller than the nozzles other inks can get through.
And without having the particles present initially, there's nothing to clog the nozzle.
Walker explains that the particles are shallow and spaced out enough to be completely transparent to the naked eye.
Without magnification, you can't tell if there's anything there.
And that quality's in demand.
For anything like TVs, to cell phones, to anything that requires a transparent interface for the user to either see or touch, you need these high-performance conductors that yet provide transparency. Currently, indium tin oxide is the material of choice. However, indium is very scarce. ITO is also brittle and requires high processing temperatures.
The silver ink is also quicker to prepare, more stable, and less prone to oxidation than other metal-based inks. That could make it easier to create powerful gizmos that could be rolled, flexed, or folded.
Thanks, Justin. About 3 billion people worldwide rely on poorly ventilated cook stoves to prepare food.
Close to half the world population cooks with basic solid fuels, so things like wood or dung or coal. And most of those in unimproved stoves, so basically on the ground with three stones and a pot bounced on top or maybe a clay ring. So this is a very inefficient and very dirty use of fuel. It's like barbecuing indoors in the dark.
That's environmental engineer Andrew Grishop of North Carolina State University. He says cook stoves are also highly inefficient, contributing to global warming as well as a significant loss of life.
There's a range of both chronic and acute health effects that are associated with exposure to these indoor pollutants. So things like childhood pneumonia, emphysema, cancer, bronchitis, cardiovascular disease. and it's in the top 5 or 10 overall risk factors for premature mortality. So a huge public health burden on the same scale as malaria or diarrheal illness from waterborne disease.
He says much safer gas and electric alternatives are being developed, but getting them to the people who need them most poses a challenge because they often don't have the means to pay for them. Still, there's reason to be hopeful.
There are potential to use carbon offsets to fund these programs, and that has a net benefit effect on the climate, and it also has its huge health benefit.
To learn more, visit cleancookstoves.org. Next, Suzanne reports on new developments in boosting food production to feed the world in the future.
Photosynthesis converts carbon dioxide from the air into the carbohydrates that make up plants. An enzyme called Rubisco harvests the carbon with the help of sunlight, but it isn't very efficient, according to Cambridge plant ecologist Howard Griffiths.
Less than 5% of that energy gets converted into food or products that we can use.
That's because Rubisco evolved billions of years ago, before oxygen was plentiful on Earth.
In today's climate, oxygen interferes with its conversion of carbon dioxide into sugars.
He says some crops, like corn and sugarcane, have evolved strategies to make photosynthesis more efficient.
What those plants do is to actually artificially increase the CO2 concentration around Rubisco, and that offsets its interaction with oxygen and improves its efficiency.
He and his colleagues are trying to learn from these crops in order to supercharge photosynthesis in less efficient crops like soybeans, rice, and potatoes.
If we could make crops like soy and potatoes increase their yields by maybe 15 to 20%, and at the same time reduce their demand for water, we could increase productivity from those areas of land that we currently cultivate.
This could help feed an increasing human population and boost biofuel production.
The take-home message is this: we have a problem. We have too many people. We need to feed these folk for the future, and we need to call on all the resources that are available to us to firstly understand how plants work, and then secondly work out how we can use that to make life better for people. And one of the ways that we can hope to do this is by trying to make sure that crop yields are sustainable for the next 50 to 100 years. And so we need to have both traditional crop breeding allied to modern molecular techniques, informed by our new understanding of how plants convert carbon into usable carbohydrates and energy. And in that way, in the future, we hope we can provide a sustainable future for our population.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week's podcast is all about language, from using social media to save endangered languages to how developmental psychologists spot language delays in children around the world and how worms use chemistry to tell each other off. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.